Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So I thought I would try to continue a little bit about the theme I picked up this morning for the morning reflection for people who weren't here. It was just mentioned briefly that a couple of weeks ago Ajahn Siddhanta was here and we were talking about metta practice and how he actually kind of inspired me to start that practice again from something one of his teachers in Thailand had sort of given him instructions, and then just having a sort of a different way of practicing the way Ajahn Siddhanta is right now from how I've been practicing for the last at least 6 months. Kind of more, my primary focus has been metta, informal practice meditation, and outside of practice. And so I was just this morning, was mentioning like one of the ways that, say, Ajahn Siddhanta was kind of working with it was just going through, say, different key words or key phrases, using those as a way of contemplation, keeping the wholesome qualities, skillful qualities in the mind. And the word that sort of jumped out at me at the time in the last couple of weeks was the Pali word mudu, which means gentleness or mild. Just even that word in of itself, like I really don't even need to go into too much detail or analytical, you know, breaking down the word, or even, you know, looking up in the Pali Dictionary, sort of different translations of that word, because I get a pretty, you know, clear sense of what that means, to have a mild personality or a mild temperament. And it's more just remembering that sort of mindfulness throughout the day in every situation, to just keep coming back to that, just noticing when the mind isn't being gentle, when I'm not being gentle with other people or with my own mind states. You know, I mentioned like first parts of the meditation in the morning can usually be quite relaxing and the mind's pretty focused, but a certain point in the, when I sit over an hour, then the body starts getting tense or a little bit of soreness comes in and I can see the mind starting to get agitated. And so I just, in the last 2 weeks, I've just been just coming back to that, just the word mudu. Using it exactly like, you know, how we're kind of taught to use budo, using mu with the in-breath and du with the out-breath, you know, mu, du, and just keep repeating that phrase. You know, after a while, just when you, you know, sort of contemplate a word like that and contemplate the meaning of it too, even though it's a foreign language or, you know, say Pali, if you're not a Pali scholar, it's like, you know, the meaning will still be there. So it's like, even though as I'm, you're just repeating that word mudu, you know, that sense of, oh yeah, just be gentle with this. You know, it's like when I feel the resistance or tension, it's just, oh yeah, just relax around that. You know, don't need to force or to push. You know, so far as seems to be going well, and I haven't really needed to, that's like the one word I just have been focusing on. And I think what I'll be doing over the time, what I have intention to do is to, in the first part of the Metta Sutta, there's the very first third of the Sutta, the Buddha just sort of gives a sort of a preamble to doing the loving kindness practice. I've heard various teachers talk about it in different ways. This the first part of the Sutta. You know, it says, you know, this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness, and then it goes through these. I guess it's 14 or 15 different words. And I've heard it talked about in terms of, like, these are qualities that you should develop to, you know, to bring to fruition. So, like, if you want to be skillful, if you want to be doing loving kindness, then these are the things that you should be, you know, cultivating. And having the mind established in those will lead to a mind that's able to concentrate and to be able to do, you know, any kind of meditation. In particular, in the Metta Sutta, it's gearing towards doing the loving kindness meditation. But I've also heard that it's for, you know, for a mind that just coming from the opposite direction, so like a mind that is concentrated, a mind that can get into loving kindness or any other sort of meditation, these would be qualities that you would have already have developed. So it's, you can look at it either way. It's like, okay, you know, I don't have that ability, but I want to, so these are things that we can develop. So what I'll probably be doing is just going through and, say, Ajahn Siddhanta suggested just having a little, like, notebook. And I've got a really small one. It's about like 3 inches by 4 inches, you know, easily fit into a backpack or, your back pocket or something like that. And then I'm just going to write down all of those 15 different Pali phrases. And then probably just like on each page, I'll just like, you know, devote one page to a particular word and just sort of go through it and sort of have like the definition of the, you know, from the Pali English dictionary or, you know, there are various talks. Bhikkhu Bodhi has a couple of really nice talks that he's given, sort of going through the Metta Sutta word by word and giving his take on all the different words. And Ajahn Sona, I know he has at least one, maybe a couple of talks where he's done the same thing. So it's kind of good to go through and listen to, you know, other teachers. When we were started doing this practice up when I was at the Pacific Hermitage, we were taking some stuff from Andy Olensky at the Berry Center for Buddhist Studies. I think he did the same thing. He had a word-by-word analysis, and we have here in the monastery, we have a trilineation version of the Pali, of that sutta as well, so giving a word-by-word definition, and then how we chant it, or another version of how the Metta Sutta could be translated. So it's really good to, you know, go through those and just hear other people's opinions and get, you know, a real sense of what all of the words mean. Because one of the things is, it's like when you start looking at the translations that we do, you know, it is a poem, and so it's, we're trying to get trying to chant something that's beautiful and has meaning. But sometimes the words that we choose to translate things aren't actually accurate. They might be, could be a mistranslation, or, you know, might be more of a poetic, you know, trying to get at a particular, just make it sound, you know, make it sound nice. And Bhikkhu Bodhi points out that the way we chant the Metta Sutta, one of the translations is actually wrong. One of the qualities is be gentle in speech, and he says that translation should actually be somebody who's easy to admonish, and so it's, you know, completely different feel to it. You know, there is that quality of you know, being gentle. That's the mudu. So being gentle in speech, and there's other qualities there that you know, say being humble and being contented and sort of being skillful. And it's being wise. So, like, if you are skillful, if you are gentle, you know, you would be gentle in your speech. So it's not that it's something that's not something that, say, we shouldn't be doing, or it's not even valid. But the Pali word that we're translating there is actually means easy to be admonished, or someone who's receptive, being receptive to feedback from people, and which, you know, also ties into, say, humbleness as well. So a lot of these words, they kind of overlap, and it's kind of, you know, it is good to kind of know that, to see, you know, to see the interconnectedness with the different words, and that quality of you know, being easy to admonish. You know, you can see that it's a real blessing to yourself and to others. I've talked about this several times, but you know, it's like if you know somebody who you know is easy to talk to, you know, like if you see them doing something wrong, and or just, you know, doing something that they may not even understand or know that, you know, they're causing themselves difficulty, or, you know, they might be making themselves some enemies or something, like, you know, or just causing some resentment, you know, behind, and they may not even know that. But if you know that person sort of is not going to get upset with you if you go and talk to them, you know, it's a, just, you know, just imagine the quality of your own heart. Like if someone was doing something that you actually needed to say something to them, you know, it's like if you had to go up and you knew this person was going to get angry with you, there's going to be some fear, going to be intrepidation. But if it's somebody that is easy to approach, you know, there'd be a completely different feel in your heart. And so, you know, if you can imagine that if you had trained yourself to be someone who is easy to speak to, then it's you just imagine that other people, they're not going to be afraid of you. There's lack of fear. There's lack of say mistrust. And it's really easy to get into that, like if someone says something about you, to sort of, this defensiveness, or just sort of this, having this self-image that we have, and, kind of hoping that, people will see ourselves in that same way. And then I've seen it happen like 3 or 4 times just in the last couple of days. I've kind of been thinking about this theme, and it happened to me the other day. I had an idea of a work project that I wanted to do, and then I heard the work monk mentioning that he wanted somebody else to do it, and I kind of felt the heart contract, like, wait, I want to, I've already talked to somebody about that. And then kind of probably made a minor scene about it, and then I was like, afterwards I realized, like, well, that was not necessary. Or it's like putting pressure on the work monk to try to get something that I wanted to do. And it's like, that wasn't kind, that wasn't nice. Being the work monk is a really stressful position, and it's like the last thing he needs is people sort of making preferences and making demands. And so I could see that was kind of based on this image that I had of myself. And then when something happened externally, that it was, even though it wasn't sort of like being admonished, but you could see that it's kind of related to that. And then I saw several other situations, just the last couple of days where something like that would happen. And actually, in almost every situation that I've noticed, and maybe I noticed it because the person actually later sort of checked it out, sort of came and just sort of like, oh, when I said that, how did that sound, or what did that feel like to you? And there's a real beauty in that, and just sort of what happened with me on the work scene. Trying to do too many things, and people were asking me questions, and I was just pretty giving yes/no answers, where I could have actually given a couple of minute explanations of what probably could have been done. And afterwards, I just sort of went to the people and just sort of said, sorry about that. And if I hadn't done that, it would have been okay. But in my experience, has been like if someone's done something that's unskillful or just being short with me, and I can sort of write that off. But there will be this little sort of lingering thing in the back of my head, like I don't, maybe saying I don't trust that person's a little bit too strong, but there'll be a little bit of a sort of scar, sort of a little bit of dirt kind of there. But then, when that person comes back to me and sort of says, oh, I was a little bit tired this morning, and, I understand I probably was a little bit, could have been a little more skillful with my speech, I apologize for that. Like, my impression of that person completely changes. It's just like, even though they had done something that was, not so helpful, or at the time, was a little bit irritating maybe, but just that the person just coming and checking out, or just sort of explaining where they are, it completely changes. It's like, not only does it sort of like the negative behavior vanish, but it just it replaces it with this extremely positive impression of that person. And so, and somehow, this is kind of contemplating this all in relationship to that phrase of being easy to admonish. So it's just easy to seeing how we do affect each other, and kind of learning to sort of own up to that, because it's a, we can see, and it starts with ourselves. So to see, like for myself, when I was on the work scene, it's like, even though I was sort of a little bit irritable, or just being a little bit short with my speech, actually at the time I knew I was doing it, and wasn't able to stop it, or at least I didn't get worse. I didn't start yelling, telling people to leave me alone. So it's like, I can think of it as a positive that way. but the, you know, turned it into a, hopefully a positive, and then into just being able to own up to it later. And so it's learning to just to be honest with where we are, and to, in some ways it's like not to be afraid of that. Like if we are on the in the monastery and we're in a bad mood, and it's like one thing is like living in a monastery, living at a Bhaiagiri in particular, is like we have the freedom, we have the space that, you know, we don't always have to be, you know, angels. You know, we don't always have to be on, we do have to be on our best behavior. We do have to, you know, keep the precepts and try to be harmonious. But it's like if we are in a bad mood, it's like there's a little bit of space here to, you know, to be okay with that. It's like not everybody here, you don't have to be, you know, going around on a, floating around on a cloud and making everybody happy and things like that. But we can actually be ourselves, and we can actually learn how to do that, how to just be who we are. And that's why I think metta is really important, because it's like we can actually be in a bad mood and still be practicing metta. What I mean by that is that, trying to think of the phrasing in the sutta itself, but it's wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. So that last phrase, Ajahn Siddhanta, if we're talking about that phrase in particular, he took that whole phrase there and internalized it instead of talking about it externally, looking at it internally. So it's like, you know, so for one thing is, you know, trying not to be sort of anger and ill will. When I was sort of, I took some notes from our conversation, and when I was reading it back to myself, I said, you know, even feeling sort of anger and ill will, you know, may I not cause any harm. And that really sort of, you know, sort of opened up my heart quite a bit. So it's like, yeah, I do feel aversion at times. I do have, times when I feel defensive or I feel hurt and things like that. But even when I'm feeling that way, I can still, you know, try not to harm anybody. And at one level, that actually is what loving kindness is. It's a in the Eightfold Path, say right intention is the intention to non-harming, non-ill-will, non-cruelty, and renunciation. So it's this, non-ill-will and non-cruelty would be the compassion. So metta and karuna, and goodwill and compassion. And so it's a... those are kind of like mental states. So it's like even though, you know, you might be feeling, say, that aversion, or might even be feeling rage and you're really wanting to act out, but our verbal actions, our physical conduct in the world can be just the opposite. You know, we can actually show, you know, say, restraint and take say joy or take some pride in that, you know, take that as a positive thing that, yeah, even though I do feel hurt, I do have this aversion, that I don't need to act on this. We can choose not to act on that. Well, when I was sitting during the meditation tonight, I was kind of contemplating what I was going to talk, and this was the second half of the talk. So now I've got to think about what the first half of the talk I was thinking about was metta, but again connecting it with I think I've been hinting at it already. It's when I'm seeing the when you get into the practice of loving kindness and doing this the way I had been practicing of doing the phrases, and I won't get into it too much detail, but for those that don't know how I'm practicing, it's sort of going through, it's more of a traditional sort of the commentarial style from, say, Burma is where I've mainly kind of learned it, and in using some notes from a Thai monk, and it's basically just sort of learning to connect with these different qualities of non-harming and this very gentle feeling of goodwill. It's not a blissed out feeling at all. It's not sort of being happy or anything, but it's just a feeling of tenderness, very soft feeling. And then once you're able to stay with that feeling and have intention to yourself, then you start doing other classifications of people. And during the retreat, I was just this particular teacher I was listening to only had us doing four categories, but I've been doing a lot of listening to other talks, and as I recall now, it's like most of the teachers I've always had have usually like five or six different categories of people. So it's like starting with yourself, and then someone who's a teacher, someone who's a benefactor, someone who's been of great help to you, then someone who's a really good friend, and then a neutral person, and then someone who's difficult. And what's becoming even more and more clear to me is that this this loving kindness and this whole meditation is really about interconnectedness. It's about learning to empathize with other people. It's almost sort of to get out of my own self concern and to start seeing things from other people's perspectives. And so it's with these, going back to Ajahn, the way Ajahn Siddhanta was sort of suggesting, or the way he's practicing, looking at all of those different words from the first part of the Metta Sutta, and it's like, and just seeing how each of those qualities, can affect our relationship with other people. So it's like, being humble, like how does that, being humble towards, say, our teacher, say, Ajahn Pasano, there's a certain feeling of, it's very humble, it's very easy to do that, to be humble around Lumpur, but then, someone who's like, say, your best friend, it's like, it's a different, might take a little bit more practice to actually sort of to envision, to know what that would be, to be humble around your best friend. It's because we probably have a much more relaxed attitude towards that person. But then being humble towards, it might actually even be easy to be humble towards someone who's a difficult person. It might be quite easy to not wanting to engage in a hostile conversation. But someone who's neutral or kind of that would be seen more like the same sort of level that we are on, socially, same level, like a good friend, that could be, a different quality. So it's thinking of this in terms of going through each of those different qualities and thinking of those in terms of all the different classifications and this again, interaction of how we see ourselves with other beings, and this real sense of empathy, of learning to, just to be concerned about other people, and take an interest in what other people find interesting, and or just to know what their difficulties are, we hear about things here a lot. It's Bhagiri is getting to be large enough now that it's easy for some people to kind of slip through the cracks. Like somebody might have some sort of difficulty, and it can be quite easy just to assume, oh, somebody else is probably taking care of that, or somebody else is probably checked in with that person about that difficulty, and then then everybody might have that attitude, and that person can kind of feel marginalized or sometimes even hurt. That it's like nobody in the monastery had taken the time to say, check in with that person, and so it's just learning to. I notice this almost all the time during the morning period when we're going through the business meeting, the business notes, right before the the work assignments goes out. We go get the calendar out and we read what's going to happen for that day and what's going to happen for the next day. And, you know, it's really easy just to listen to that in terms of, okay, what do I have to do? Is there anything I'm going to be having to do? And then, it happens many mornings where like the calendar will have been read and it's like, one of the Anagarikas is leaving to, take someone in for a doctor's appointment. And then, like, this happened when I was doing the work scene last week. And then it was like you just mentioned, you know, Josh is going to be driving someone into town. And the very first thing I asked Josh if he could be the kitchen manager, not from the truck. And so him going into town didn't have anything to do with me. So I didn't even hear that aspect of it. So it's this paying attention to that, noticing that, like, okay, wow, I wasn't really, paying attention to how the daily scenes affecting other people and what they're doing. So, learning to take an interest in that to a certain extent. And then I think one of the qualities I kind of like about the sort of having a little notebook, with all of these different qualities is when I first started learning the metta meditation, my mind was at that point was really weak. And I can remember just going through the four different phrases that we were using. I don't know exactly which ones they were teaching at the time, but just, four simple phrases like, may I be safe, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I live with ease of well-being. You're just having those four phrases, and it's just basically we're supposed to just go over and over those phrases for, 10 days. And especially at the very beginning of the retreat, may I be what? Oh, yeah, happy, that's right. Yeah, may I be happy. Now what was that? What else was I supposed to be feeling? Yeah, and it was interesting because I was kind of embarrassed, and there's no way I would have ever told this to the teacher that my mind was that dull, and somebody else fortunately had a little more wisdom and asked the question, and they said, oh, that's quite common, so it's a quite common thing to happen, and so I said, just write it on a piece of paper and just tape it to the floor in front of you. And if you start doing the phrases and your mind is really dull, just open your eyes and read it. And I was like, so I did that. And so this, there's 15 or 16 different words here, and so it's it's not quite so easy to it's maybe easy to keep the 16 words, but maybe not all the detailed definitions and different people's ideas about them. So just to have a little book, and probably what I'll do is, like, just on the very first page, just have all the different words, just one, and just the Pali word and whatever translation sort of jumps out for me that actually makes more sense for me. And so, like, the mudu, it's like you can translate that. The word mudu, you can translate many different ways, but say gentle is what connects with me. So have that word there. And so I kind of like this as a meditation technique, because we get we have this image of, a lot of us have an image of sort of, meditation is just sitting with the eyes closed and not moving, and some people even have the image that it's, not thinking, not, just emptying the mind. But it's developing these wholesome qualities. And if it's, something very simple like that, having a sheet of paper that we can keep coming back to, or having it in a notepad in your backpack, and as you're walking up the hill, and just sort of contemplating a word, and one aspect of it is, like, one of the meditations we do is the 32 body parts, sort of memorizing those 32 body parts, and keeping keeping that in mind. So it's the same. You can do it the same way with these 15 different qualities. Just continually going through them. So these are just a few reflections on just some different ways that I've been contemplating metta practices in the last couple of weeks. And if there's anything that I've said that seems to be useful or helpful to you, I'm happy for that. And If not, as Ajahn Amar used to always say, you can just set it aside. So I'll leave that for our reflection this evening.
Sadhu, sadhu.